Hello, this is the Chorus Call conference operator. Welcome to Vecima Networks' first quarter fiscal year 2019 results conference call and webcast. As a reminder, all participants are in listen-only mode, and the conference is being recorded. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. Analysts and institutional investors who wish to join the question queue, simply press star and one on your touchtone phone. You will hear a tone acknowledging your request. If you're using a speakerphone, please lift the handset before pressing any keys. Should anyone need assistance during the conference call, they may signal an operator by pressing star and zero on their telephone. Presenting today on behalf of Vecima Networks are Sumit Kumar, and President and CEO, and John Hanna, CFO. Today's call will begin with executive commentary on Vecima's financial and operational performance for the first quarter fiscal year 2019 results. Lastly, the call will finish with a question and answer period for analysts and institutional investors. The press release announcing the company's first quarter fiscal year 2019 results, as well as detailed supplemental investor information, are posted on Vecima's website at www.vecima.com under the Investors heading. The highlights provided in this call should be understood in conjunction with the company's unaudited, condensed interim consolidated financial statements and accompanying notes for the 3 months ended September 30th, 2018, which are available on Vecima's website at www.vecima.com. Certain statements in this conference call and webcast may constitute forward-looking statements within the meaning of applicable securities laws. All statements other than statements of historical fact are forward-looking statements. These statements include, but are not limited to, statements regarding the management's intentions, belief and current expectations with respect to market and general economic conditions, future sales and revenue expectations, future costs, and operating performance. These statements are not guarantees of future performance and involve risks and uncertainties that are difficult to predict and are beyond our control. A number of important factors could cause actual outcomes and results to differ materially from those expressed in these forward-looking statements. These factors include, but are not limited to, the current significant general economic uncertainty and credit and financial volatility, and the distinctive characteristics of Vecima's operations and industry and customer demand that may have material impact on or constitute risk factors in respect of Vecima's future financial performance, as set forth under the heading Risk Factors in the company's annual information form dated September 27, 2018. A copy of which will be available at www.sedar.com. In addition, although the forward-looking statements in these earnings calls are based on what management believes are reasonable assumptions, such assumptions may prove to be incorrect. Consequently, attendees should not place undue reliance on such forward-looking statements. In addition, these forward-looking statements relate to the date on which they are made. Vecima disclaims any intention or obligation to update or revise any forward-looking statements as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise, except as required by law. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Kumar to proceed with his remarks. Please go ahead.
Thank you, and good morning, everyone. The first quarter of fiscal 2019 was a highly productive period for Vecima. We made excellent progress expanding and differentiating our products with new offerings and features. We also secured new supply agreements, optimized our sales operations, and implemented a major new brand initiative. It was a very strong period operationally. Financially, it was a more challenging quarter, with revenue of $21.3 million, adjusted EBITDA of $1.9 million, and a net loss of $1.1 million. On the top line, revenue from our content delivery and storage segment was impacted by a push-out on timing for some of our customer orders. And we recorded a $0.8 million restructuring charge as we streamlined our manufacturing operations for the year ahead. On a full-year basis, we continue to look forward to a strong contribution from the content delivery and storage segment in fiscal 2019. But our Q1 results underscore that customer timing can drive large quarterly revenue swings in this part of our business. And seasonally, the first quarter is typically the weakest for this segment. Allow me to expand on some of the timing characteristics for the content delivery and storage business to better familiarize investors with this new segment. IPTV and OTT deployments at customers are typically complex projects with broad system sales. Vecima's platforms are part of a larger ecosystem, including partners and components internally developed by customers. This can span all of back-office systems, user interfaces, and customer premise equipment, in addition to our storage, transcode, and CDN. Between the complex project nature and interdependencies, timelines do occasionally adjust. Despite these challenges, our first quarter gross margin remained well within our target range at 52.5%, and we ended the quarter with a strong cash balance of $53.4 million. Looking at some of the highlights from our three operating segments, in our video and broadband solutions segment, we remain tightly focused on bringing our new Entra products to market. We completed lab testing of our legacy QAM adapter with a major MSO and are now ready to start field trials. This is a product that provides video services on our customers' existing Edge QAM infrastructure within a distributed access architecture. It's an important tool to shift our customers over to the DAA network architecture. Video services in a DAA architecture can be highly challenging, and this has been widely acknowledged by the industry. Vecima's LQA elegantly and simply solves this challenge. Meanwhile, our distributed access node, which is the heart of our solution, continues to prove itself in customer lab testing, with its interoperability shining. During the first quarter, we further differentiated our solution with the introduction of the Entra Remote PHY Monitor. This new product enables operators to monitor and manage their Remote PHY access nodes and provides excellent visibility into how the nodes are performing, addressing a key operational challenge of DAA by giving the nodes a voice. It's a solution that's resonating strongly with operators, and it's capturing awards recognition as well. Our Entra Remote PHY Monitor was recently honored in the 2018 BTR Diamond Technology Review with a 4-Diamond Award. The judges noted that our product addresses one of the biggest missing pieces of the Remote PHY DAA use case. So, some great progress on Entra during the first quarter, and we're growing increasingly confident about the size of the opportunity for DOCSIS 3.1 DAA and our prospects in this huge new market. In our Terrace family of products, I'm pleased to report that we secured first customer engagement at revenue for Terrace DVB with a Tier 1 European MSO. This is a new version of our very successful Terrace family of commercial video products, which is focused on the European market. In our content delivery and storage segment, we launched a new branding initiative that organizes and integrates the full suite of concurrent media delivery and storage products under a common brand identity. Previously, the four product groups were marketed under different brand names. Going forward, they now share the family trademark MediaScale X, which reinforces the ways these products work together to help customers store, transform, secure, and deliver their IP video content. The unique ability of our IP video platforms to scale for the real-world capacities needed for media are reflected in this brand. We also brought our concurrent investment sales and marketing departments together to expand our global reach, increase direct engagement with customers, and leverage the combined capabilities of our platforms. We're excited about the strengths of our integrated go-to-market team. In terms of product development, we released an upgraded version of our Origin platform, which reduces the latency or time lag associated with live streaming, which is a critical and, until now, unaddressed need in IPTV. It also offers more flexibility and higher performance within the lower cost architecture. And we announced a major IPTV OTT or over-the-top upgrade with a large European MSO. This upgrade is expected to drive revenue growth with this customer for the next 3 years. In our telematics segment, we launched a new asset tracking product called Nero Equipment Tracking in the first quarter. Nero Equipment Tracking is a GPS tracking beacon designed for smaller, movable assets. Examples of this would be the dehumidifiers used by insurance restoration companies and heaters and lighting systems used by construction companies. We can demonstrate a strong return on investment for companies that choose to track this type of equipment in the field. So, overall, it was a busy quarter for Vecima, and our new product developments are giving us access to broader markets while establishing a strong foundation for our future. At this time, I'll ask John to review our fourth quarter results with you. John?
Thank you, Sumit. For the purposes of this call, we assume that everyone has seen the news release and financial statements for the fiscal 2019 first quarter that are posted on Vecima's website. I will present the relevant numbers in discussions around overall results, market segments, operational expenses, and the balance sheet. I'll start by reminding everyone that our results include the addition of the Concurrent business, which we brought on board midway through last year. As a result, all comparisons will reflect content delivery and storage numbers in the current quarter and not in the prior year quarter. As well, this quarter we adopted IFRS 15, revenue from contracts with customers, with a date of initial application of July 1st, 2018. As a result, we changed our accounting policy for revenue recognition. We have applied IFRS 15 using the modified retrospective approach and have recognized the cumulative effect of initially applying the standard as an adjustment to the opening balance of equity at July 1st, 2018. The adjustment to retained earnings of approximately $102,000 is immaterial in the context of our financial statements. Now turning to Q1 results. Starting with consolidated sales for the 3 months ended September 30th, 2018, we generated sales of $21.3 million. This was a 43% increase from the same quarter last year due to the contribution from content delivery and storage, but was down 12% from $24.3 million in Q4 fiscal 2018. In the Video and Broadband Solutions segment, we generated first quarter sales of $11.3 million, a 2% increase from the $11.1 million in sales last quarter, but down from $13.6 million in the same period last year. In our Terrace product family, sales were down 4% to $7.0 million from $7.3 million in the same period of last year, as the continuation of purchasing activity by a Tier 1 MSO slows its pace. Terrace QAM sales of $1.7 million decreased in line with our expectations, as our lead customer's requirement continues to taper off. In our content delivery and storage business, sales were down 28% to $8.6 million in the first quarter, as compared to $12 million in the fourth quarter of fiscal 2018, due to the impact of push out on timing for some of our customer orders, as Sumit discussed earlier. Turning to our telematics segment, sales in the fourth quarter increased to $1.4 million, up 4% from $1.3 million last quarter, and up 6% from $1.3 million in Q1 fiscal 2018. Looking at Vecima's business as a whole, we achieved a consolidated gross margin of 52.5% in the first quarter. Despite a number of offsetting positive and negative influences on gross margin this quarter, if one were to isolate the IFRS 15 changes in the quarter, comparatively, overall gross margin for Q1 would have been very similar to Q4 2018. The various components of operating expenses, namely R&D, sales and marketing, and G&A, were all higher in the current period compared to the prior year due to our concurrent acquisition. Excluding content delivery and storage expenses, the notable changes year over year in Q1 operating expenses were as follows. R&D was down $0.2 million due largely to lower prototype costs and subcontracting costs, offset slightly by higher staffing costs. Sales and marketing was basically flat with increased staffing costs offset by the reclassification of commissions and support costs to cost of goods sold under IFRS 15. G&A was down $0.1 million due primarily to prior year acquisition costs that didn't occur this year. Total OPEX on a sequential quarterly basis was slightly lower in Q1 at $12.5 million, down from $12.6 million in Q4 of fiscal 18. However, the current quarter included restructuring charges of $0.8 million. We experienced a net loss from continuing operations of $1.1 million, or 0.5 cents per share, $0.05 per share. This compares to net income from continuing operations of $0.8 million, or $0.04 per share, in Q4 2018. This was due to the decreased contribution in both the video broadband solutions and content delivery and storage segments. Turning to the balance sheet, we ended the quarter with cash and short-term investments of $53.4 million, and our working capital remains strong at $73.2 million. Finally, cash flow from operations, excluding non-cash working capital, was $0.7 million, compared to $9.1 million in the same period last year. The $8.4 million change reflects a $6.8 million decrease in cash flow from non-cash working capital, and a $1.6 million decrease in operating cash flow. While this quarter's performance did not meet our expectations due to orders being pushed out, we are confident in the long-term view of the business. Now back to Sumit.
Thank you, John. Turning to our outlook for fiscal 2019, in our video and broadband solutions segment, we expect to see a continuation of transition dynamics as the industry prepares for DOCSIS 3.1 distributed access architecture. While the timing of the volume phase remains difficult to predict, we're working closely with our MSO customers, and we're continuing to invest in Entra as we further differentiate and enhance the advantages of our platform. In our content delivery and storage segment, our outlook remains very positive. We're seeing a build-up to a wide IPTV market that can support services like time-shift TV, streaming, and cloud DVR. Our MediaScale X family of products broadly address this market and are creating a large pipeline of opportunities in the US, Europe, and APAC. But I would remind you again that this part of our business can have significant quarterly sales variances. I would urge you to think about results on a full year rather than a quarterly basis. Finally, in our telematics segment, we anticipate incremental growth and demand for our fleet tracking products in fiscal 2019. We'll also be pursuing the new opportunities in asset tracking. Across all of our product families, we're creating unique, must-have features that are advancing our competitive position. And we remain strongly positioned as the industry approaches two of the most significant market developments driving its future, getting to gigabit internet and moving to IP video with all of its powerful features. Our focus is on pursuing the significant opportunities in both sectors, while also leveraging the complementary nature of these two businesses to provide benefits to our customers. We're very excited about our future. That concludes our formal comments for today. We'd now be happy to take questions. Operator?
We will now begin the question and answer session. Analysts and institutional investors who would like to ask a question, please press star and one on their touchtone phone. You will hear a tone to indicate you're in queue. For participants using a speakerphone, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing any keys. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. There will be a brief moment while we poll for questions. The first question is from Todd Copeland with CIBC. Please go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon, Todd.
I had a few questions, but let me get the P&L out of the way first. So, John, if I think about run rate OPEX, would I exclude the $800K? So it's actually more like 11.7 rather than 12.5?
You'd exclude the $800K, but I think we'd be looking with the adjustments that we're seeing more in the 12.2 range.
I see.
So
G&A. And it should hang around the 12-ish range until Entra starts to kick in and you've got to spend some money to push that into the market. Is that the right way to think about that?
That's right, yeah. Similar to my comments last quarter, sort of in Q3, Q4, we do expect a little bit of an uptick in the sales and marketing area for that entry.
Okay. And on deferred development expenses, I guess they're in the $4 million range. Is that still about the right number as we think about quarterly spends through the year?
Yeah, I would say so. And on a total expenditure basis, we were down a little bit in Q1 as compared to Q4. I think we're probably, you know, move back up a little bit closer to where we were in Q4 overall.
I see. Okay. And then if you would just to sort of characterize your comments on timing of volume phase of Entra being uncertain. I mean, you would have said that last quarter as well. So are you saying it's potentially shifting out here a little bit, or what are you actually saying when you make that statement?
Sure, and I think as we've talked about this timing, it's a major, you know, network access upgrade that's taking place over, you know, in the better part of a decade across the whole market. So, you know, it's been very challenging to pinpoint timing, and in some respect, we, along with the entire industry, see it as having, you know, having come to its genesis a lot slower than initially hoped. So that, you know, variability down to the quarter level is something that remains the case. I think, you know, we've seen that calendar 19 is being poised as an important year for distributed access in general. We're starting to see more formality behind trials and whatnot, and with respect to, you know, our engagements as well in that regard. So, you know, we do anticipate that the timing is still variable to that, to get to that precision, but that calendar 19 will be an important year.
And, I mean, I would have thought the cable companies are starting to put their CapEx plans out there for 2019. So it sounds like what you're saying is, even though they have some rough ideas on what they want to do in 2019, they're not specifically locking in broad deployment at this point in time.
Yeah, I think, you know, we only have a certain direct visibility into the allocation of CapEx budgets to distributed access. You know, we do think that within calendar 19 there will be allocation, you know, especially at some of these leading tier ones that are looking at that year. Importantly, we don't have precision in terms of what their exact plans are going to be on spend. There's some influence of Gen 1, Gen 2 dynamics that we've talked about at work at several customers. But on the other hand, you know, there's a need, and like we've said, it's been a long bring-up cycle for DAA in general, so we do anticipate Gen 1-oriented activity happening calendar 19.
And just from our point of view, are there sort of any macro drivers that will tilt that by the MSOs one way or another?
I think, you know, you know, on the economic point, that's a bit removed from myself. I think that, you know, macro-wise, as we think about it from the MSO perspective, they're continuously evaluating their broadband access service and how that situates themselves competitively with fiber to the home and whatnot. We've seen various up and down cycles in fiber to the home, considering how daunting of a prospect that is for the cable MSO's competitors. So that's all in part led to some of this variability we're seeing, you know, in terms of how fast they move competitively. We do think that, generally speaking, on the macro level, this move to gigabit access is starting to happen. It's, you know, in line with what the subscribers and customers are demanding, and the kind of taste and need for this insatiable bandwidth we always talk about. So that is starting to happen. And we're starting to see the operators consider when they need to outfit and get further penetration at gigabit speeds.
Okay, I think I asked you this once before, but maybe just refresh me. And does the telco activity on fixed broadband access with 5G, does that influence any decisions here, or do they still view that as sort of a toy exercise and not a real big hammer?
I think it's a bit much to call it a toy, but I think that, the perception of it being a hammer on fixed wireline access like DOCSIS 3.1 multi-gigabit. You know, we think that's a long shot at this point in time in terms of that being viable. And yes, we have talked about it before, and you know, between the cell radiuses and things like that required, there's so much that's needed for 5G to become competitive with 3.1 in DOCSIS, that we've got a long period of time before that becomes a factor.
Yeah, no, that's fair, and I certainly accept that point as well. They got a ways to prove that, and it's more of a step towards mobile anyway. So,
right.
Okay, that's great. Those are all the questions I had. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Todd.
The next question is with David Kwan with PI Financial. Please go ahead.
Hey guys.
Hi, Dave.
Morning.
Can you guys talk about the revenue opportunity? I guess in the content delivery and storage business with that large European MSO?
Sure. So this European MSO has recently come to a new phase of deployment with us. Concurrent products were our content delivery and storage products were deployed in their network for IP linear to a certain extent. They have a few million subscribers in Europe there, and we've got a decent amount of coverage today. There's a broad expansion being looked at today as they start to move, generally speaking, now to favoring the IPTV platform across the entire network. So having had the original deployment of OTT at that operator, we're now levering up, and deploying all of storage for cloud DVR, cache, and origin, moving towards, a multi-year broadening at that operator. So that's, a powerful platform for us. And it's a classical, MSO that's moving fully to IPTV with our solutions. So that's precisely the type of evolution that we're tracking towards here.
How can we think about it, I guess, from a revenue perspective over the few years? I think you guys had indicated the opportunity is.
Yeah, I think, part and parcel of the bigger picture that we see for content delivery and storage that, fiscal 19, we're going to see a decent amount of modest growth in, our first year relative to the trailing 12 months from Q4. We anticipate that continuing in fiscal 20 and whatnot. This is an important component, one of many components to that growth. An important milestone for us in securing this multi-year deployment as part of the growth picture.
Okay. I guess moving on to Terrace IQ, curious to get an update there, how it's going. I think you've got one customer in particular that you've been working with. Just curious kind of where that is right now in terms of potential commercialization.
Yep, Terrace IQ has proven to become a powerful next-generation platform for commercial video. We've talked in Terrace generally about three U.S. Tier 1s being our key customers for the family today. Two of those are now on a path towards looking at Terrace IQ to transition over for their blueprint commercial video platform. That'll involve both the any new sites that they're capturing in this network fill-in mode, as well as over time re-outfitting the several thousand properties that we've deployed with prior generation Terrace platforms. Again, that's in line with their overall video network evolution towards IPTV features to feed the commercial property with the same IPTV network, and then once again recreate this model that we've enabled with the Terrace and Terrace QAM families of having the bulk video within the commercial property without weighing down the televisions with any form of set-top box and whatnot. That's been very powerful domestically with 25,000 some properties that these three tier one MSOs have deployed. We're into development. We're in the process of formalizing agreements with two of those three operators. The third one is also aware of it and is in a different phase, but we anticipate that they'll start to move towards the IQ in time as well. So, development is underway. I think, it's a fourth generation platform, much higher density. The IPTV features are coming in, so a fair amount of development to do. We anticipate that we could have it out the door in calendar 19 at some point.
Sense on when, like first half of calendar 19 or second half?
Yeah, it's also a competitive scenario, so I'm not going to get too much precision on that, David, but, you know, it's going to land in our view in calendar 19, and there will be various phases in terms of the feature sets and whatnot. You know, I don't want to say exactly when at this point.
Okay. Looking at the revenue that you'd broken down by region, it looks like there was $2 million coming out of Europe, and it looks like you're just starting to break out Europe there. Can you maybe provide some color how much of that would have come out of the concurrent business versus, you know, any orders that might have been in there for Terrace DVB?
Sure. So, you know, Terrace DVB is a small component of that. We had that first sale at the Tier 1 European operator. That's the lead for Terrace DVB. So that was an excellent milestone for us to get the first commercial deployment of the platform in the region. But, you know, given that was the first quarter of sales there, DVB was a small component of that overall European segment. The bulk of it, again, was content delivery and storage.
So probably the Terrace DVP, maybe a couple hundred thousand, if not.
That's in the ballpark. Yeah.
Okay. In terms of the restructuring that you guys did, was that just primarily related to kind of the expected revenue trajectory for both Terrace and TQ?
I wouldn't say it's primarily driven by that. Of course, you know, looking at the run rates of Terrace and TQ today, with that had a factor in terms of our requirements for resources, but we're more looking at where we're headed for Entra, how we've situated the operations department to align for the significant volume ahead of us there. And there was an opportunity to right size a bit more, and that's you know, optimization that we felt was a good you know, good timing for us to implement it now.
And I just, David, I would just add that on top of what Sumit said, that there was a small portion of the restructuring that was geared to legacy product, even outside of the Terrace Guam family, some of the other legacy revenue that we continue to enjoy the benefit of. And so there were some folks that were maintaining that for us, but as we've gone through end of life notices, etc., we didn't need that support any further.
Okay. Looking, I guess, where you are with concurrent, it seems like the integration is going well. Do you feel that you're in position now to, you know, if a material acquisition came across your desk, that you'd be able to react quickly on it?
Yeah, I think, you know, we're nearly a year along in our bringing in of the concurrent operations, and I've been saying that we're quite pleased with how things have gone. We've recently, you know, integrated sales and marketing at a deeper level to lever up on that. That's been a good exercise for us, and we're optimistic about the results that can come from that. Everyone's, you know, well trained on co-trained on the product lines and whatnot, so we're fully integrated and things are running along for content delivery and storage now for us. So that does, you know, lend itself to us being, you know, in a position where M&A can be considered again. You know, I've talked about the cable vendor landscape being heavily consolidated. I think there was another deal today announced that was another sign of that. And you know, that affords less in the way of opportunity, but things do come, and, you know, we still have that strong cash balance. We're already, you know, have very deep portfolio coverage for DAA and IPTV between the two segments today. So, you know, it's more if we can add incrementally to those platforms and technology and customer sets.
That was my next question that you alluded to there, Sumit, on the Aris deal. Curious to get your thoughts on that and how that impacts how you look at the business and the overall, I guess, competitive landscape.
I think it's a bit early for me to make a conclusion. I think that they have complementary products, so that was part and parcel of the two of them thinking about getting together and scaling up, and relative to another label we see in the vendor landscape that gives them an affordable, meaningful size as a competitor to them. I think it does have an opportunity to play into something we've been talking about once again, that there's demand for more vendor selection and choice by our customers, and that gives us this opportunity in distributed access nodes to offer something beyond the consolidation in this incumbent space that we've seen. So, it's a bit fresh for perspective.
Last question, just what's going on with the trade wars and the tariffs and whatnot? Aris had come out recently talking about the impact of the tariffs on their supply chain and pricing, et cetera, et cetera. Curious to get your thoughts on what you see both from your own operations and maybe what you're seeing from competitors as well.
Yeah, I'll certainly handle the first part of that, David. I would say, as it relates to the U.S. and some of the China tariffs, we're now into the third list of those items that are impacted and affected. And in the third list, some of our finished goods, some of the specific products have been impacted. However, given the way that we manufacture, assemble a product, we're still fine in terms of country of origin, so the tariffs aren't applicable. But some of our competitors, Aris being one for certain products, and as you highlighted, would be impacted by this third list. So from our point of view, we're still managing it, have no impacts. But we are aware of, I think, what you alluded to, that some of the other vendors in this space are trying to deal with the tariffs and determine whether they pass them through or they have to take them on themselves.
So would it be, John, I guess, where there may be some increased costs is really the components that are going into your products, but in terms of the actual end product or finished good that you guys are manufacturing here in Canada, that stuff that's going into the U.S. it wouldn't be impacted from a finished good standpoint? Is that a fair way of taking a look at it?
I think that's correct, yes.
Okay. Perfect. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
Once again, analysts and institutional investors who would like to ask a question, please press star and one on their touchtone phone. There are no more questions at this time. This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect your lines. Thank you for participating, and have a pleasant day.